I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. We continue to make all of our coronavirus and COVID-19 stories freely available to everyone and not subject to our subscription paywall. However, reporting is hard work and is not free, especially during this time of crisis. My colleagues and I are working long hours to bring you the latest information about the pandemic and to tell important stories about how our communities are responding during this time of crisis. If you're not a subscriber, please help us continue to do this vital work by subscribing at theday.com/subscribe. Subscriptions start as low as $3.75 a week. If you are a subscriber, thank you. In this episode of The Storyline, I talk to The Day's sports editor, Chuck Banning, about what the sports department is doing to keep telling local stories at a time when all sports, from high school through the professional level, have been postponed or canceled. We also take a visit to some local grocery stores to see how they're handling the increased demand while working long hours to sanitize stores and restock shelves. First, Chuck Banning. Chuck, thank you for joining me on the podcast today. How are you doing? How's the family? How is the work from home situation? Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, my wife and I are both working remotely from home. She's also a journalist, and we have three kids, one in college, two in high school. My oldest daughter, who's a sophomore, has resumed online classes and is adapting well. And my two high school age kids, begin on Monday. We're going to have a test run a little bit later this morning, but they're pretty technologically savvy about these things, so I don't anticipate any problems. And we just have to carve out our own space in the house to make sure we can find quiet places to take care of our business.
Yeah, same here. I'm currently, my office space is in our bedroom. My wife has a desk that she used that she gave up to me, so I'm very thankful. And how has it been discussing the current situation with your kids? I know one of them is a little bit older. It sounds like they're all older, but still, it must be something of a concern for them and something that you have to deal with as a parent.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think they're all old enough now to understand the situation. I think like even the adults, they're frustrated because they like some sense of normalcy. And I think in the back of their mind, you're always worried that it's going to happen to a friend or a family member. Obviously they have an older grandparent who, they have concerns about, but we talk to her almost daily and she's doing fine, knock on wood. So I just think, like I said, I think just like us, that they want some normalcy and, they understand, particularly my middle child, is a senior, plays across and so. Yeah. Her season's in jeopardy, and she doesn't plan to play beyond high school, so this was kind of it for her. And graduation, senior prom, all the activities that are coming up that are in all likelihood, I think she's realistic to know that these might not happen unless something drastically changes here in the next couple of weeks.
Right. So talk to me a little bit about what you and the rest of the Day sports department are doing in these times, since, as you mentioned briefly, that there aren't a lot of sports activities going on locally at the high school level, college level, and professional level. What are you doing to continue to tell our community's stories?
Well, we had a meeting before we kind of all went our separate ways and started working from home, where I just asked the staff to bring in ideas, and they brought in over 100, I want to say. And that's the nice part about having an experienced staff. There's six of us. We've all been in the business for over 20 years. Five of us have been at the Day for 25 plus years and more. So we know our readership. We know we are connected to the communities that we cover, both high schools, college, and all the other youth and rec leagues go around. So we've kind of tapped into them as good resources for us. But we've also come up with a lot of ideas. The most important thing we talked about was keeping things relevant in our sports pages and online and in any video production. So the first and foremost, we wanted to give our readers update on some of the athletes who were directly affected by this involved. And you've already seen stories online in the paper. We caught up with Noah Caskey from Montville, who's a freshman at the Coast Guard Academy. He qualified for the Nationals in wrestling as a freshman, which is remarkable. He was out in Iowa with five of his cadet athletes for the Nationals to begin. And on Thursday night, the night before we're supposed to begin, they got word that the meet had been canceled. So they had to make arrangements to get back home. His family was out there. They also they had just gotten here like an hour before they got the word. So, you know, they had to come to grips with that and then make arrangements to get back home. And there were also six athletes, three from Coast Guard and three from Connecticut College, who were at the NCAA Division III or track championships. So they were stuck in North Carolina and had to get transportation to get back home. So it was kind of tough for them, obviously. And so we tried to get those stories out there, you know, as quickly as we could, and then followed up with some of the coaches who had to deal with the situation, especially the spring athletes who no longer have seasons. Jim Penders, the UConn baseball coach, one of the things that was hard on him is he said, we never even got to take a team picture. And then when you've been coaching a long time, those are the kind of things you look for, those little things.
You
know, it's the camaraderie, it's building. And so they're missing out on a lot of that. And so those are kind of the initial stories we've been trying to get to.
Based on what you all have been reporting and the conversations you've had with local, especially at the local level, the high school level, what are some of the things that administrations and athletic directors and coaches are doing to help student athletes deal with the current situation? Not just physically, maybe physically as far as training and keeping in shape, but also emotionally and mentally.
Well, I know some of the ADs and coaches have actually, used social media, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, Instagram, and have actually posted training videos, things that, some of these athletes could do from home, whether it be simple thing as, as a regimen of, push-ups, sit-ups, or if they have weights at their disposal or a treadmill that they can, work out, in their house or they can outside just to stay active. I think initially some of them thought that there may be an opportunity for, senior type practices, get together where they could work out on their own and kind of try to stay in shape. But that quickly dissipated when I think the dire emergency of what's going on took place. And now all these ADs have instructed their student athletes that this is just not going to happen. You might be able to work out in a small group, maybe a couple of you get in the backyard and, play catch with a lacrosse stick or something like that, because you can keep your social distance. But the social distance aspect has become very important now going forward if we're ever going to get through this. So they are completely discouraging any kind of informal, team activity other than maybe a couple of friends working out in the backyard or something.
And how about at the higher levels in college and some of our local professional teams? What is the impact that you have seen as far as recruiting, as far as signing new players at the professional level? What impact have you guys heard?
As far as colleges go, I think the fall and winter coaches were not affected as much in terms of recruiting. I think most of them probably have got commits or have a pretty good idea who they're going to bring in for the upcoming season. Obviously, the spring is where a lot of coaches would use, and the college coaches in particular, would use the time to evaluate players that might be last minute signees, that type of thing. The other aspect of it, and particularly at the college level, is it looks like the NCAA is going to grant spring athletes an extra year of eligibility. It sounds easy, but it really isn't, because there are scholarships involved and there are scholarship limits, financially and number wise. So it's going to be a difficult situation in a lot of cases. Plus, we have some of our local athletes who've gone on to colleges inside and outside the area, who are seniors who have to make a decision. Do they want to go back, or are they ready to move on with their lives? One athlete we're in the process of working on a story, probably be next week at some point. She's at a lower Division I school, was on scholarship, had a really great career, but she's got an opportunity. She's going to graduate on time and has an opportunity to go to grad school. And so she's got to decide, do I want to, return to the same school and, finish my career, or do I just want to ready to move on to grad school and get on what I'm going to do as a profession? So those are kind of the stories we're trying to find and talk to some of our athletes in our area about, because – you know, I'm sure some will take care, you know, will take the year, and some probably won't. And for a variety of reasons. And I think our readers will be interested to see what, you know, just what, you know, how they're kind of in a catch 22 in some ways with how this goes. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And fortunately, you know, we have so many, you know, kids have gone on to play in college that, you know, we're going to be able to reach out to a lot of them. In fact, we're even asking some if they want to, write an essay about their experience as they make that decision. And, you know, we'll publish those in the coming days and weeks.
Talk a little bit about former New London High School basketball player India Pagan and how her athletic career has been affected by the crisis.
Yeah, it was really an interesting year for her. I mean, it was an exciting year in a lot of ways, and now it's kind of come crashing on her a little bit. Last summer, she was a member of the Puerto Rican women's national team that qualified for the Olympic Games in Tokyo. And someone at only 20, I believe, she was the youngest player on the team. So she was excited about that. And then she went back to Stony Brook, which is a mid-level Division I school on Long Island. And they had the best year of the program's history. They won the America East regular season, and they reached the championship game, which they were scheduled to host on Saturday, last Saturday, an opportunity to go to the NCAA tournament for the first time, and never got played. Obviously, it got canceled. So she's had the double whammy of not having an opportunity to go to the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. She'll have another year, obviously, as she's only a junior, and then the Olympics were obviously postponed till 2021. So she's still a member of that team, but that's something that could fluctuate. Someone could get hurt. Maybe somebody better comes along. They're going to have to completely reevaluate the roster going forward for 2021. Hopefully she's still able to be a part of it, but it's something that she was obviously very excited about, and now that's on hold.
You mentioned the Olympics. Any other local connections to the Olympics and how they've been affected by the postponement of the games?
Yeah, a couple. One indirectly, which we already wrote about, Jan Merrill Morin, who was a member of the 1976 and 1980 Olympic teams in track and field. She went to Montreal in 76 and participated, and then had made the team in 1980. And unfortunately, that was the year that we boycotted. President Reagan decided to boycott the games. And she stayed involved. She's still coaching in the area at Old Saybrook High School right now. She lives in Waterford. And she just had great perspective on it. And, she can understand the frustration some of these younger athletes are feeling. But she just told them to stay in the moment. And, there's no reason they still can't pursue their dream. And I thought that was a good message. And then we have two elite rowing athletes from O-line, Liam Corrigan and Austin Hack, who have made the U.S. men's team. They were still fighting for berths on the heavyweight eight, which is the big boat. But there are also other boats, and they've been out in California training. We reached out to them, and right now, honestly, they're still trying to come to grips with it and don't really want to process it first before they talk to us about it. They said definitely they would like to at some point sit down and talk to us about it, either when they get back home or if they're going to stay out there. So we will have a story on them eventually, but sometimes you just give these people space too, and that's what you need to do.
It's rough, especially with the Olympics, where it's every 4 years that the window for some of these sports and some of these athletes is pretty small.
Yeah, especially in a sport like rowing. In a lot of ways, even the Olympics have become much more professionalized. I mean, you look at the basketball teams, they're all NBA, WNBA players. Even the track and field athletes and the swimmers, they have a lot of sponsorship opportunities, so they make some money on the side. But a sport like rowing is really truly an amateur sport still, and they pin their hopes on what happens every 4 years. And unfortunately they're gonna have to wait a year. I don't know how that will affect them going forward. I would still imagine that's going to be the team, although they're going to qualify for different boats, and we'll find that out when we actually sit down and talk. But I'm sure that's probably why those two in particular are struggling with it, because there's a lot of uncertainty now, though they're still going to go on a year later.
Can you share any other stories that you guys are working on, anything that we could preview in the coming weeks?
A couple of things we have coming up, for our readers. We begin our all area section, the winter athletes of the year and teams. That's beginning on this Sunday, and that will run for 8 straight days. Sports doesn't stop for us in that regard. The winter season's predominantly were completed, obviously with the exception of the two basketballs and swimming. But we, you know, we certainly, they had full regular seasons and some tournaments. So we were able to pick those teams in the players of the year. And then we'll also recognize, you know, players of the year and all area teams in the other sports. So it's something we really enjoy every year. We look forward to picking. We really look forward to telling the story, a good profile of our players of the year, not just as athletes, but what they do. And so that starts on Sunday, and something I know our readers always enjoy. And then the other thing we're going to do, because the spring season is in jeopardy, we all know it. We're hoping that maybe there could be some shortened version, but realistically, there's a good chance it's not going to happen. So starting April 4th, which is next Saturday, which was going to be the beginning of the high school season,
right?
We're going to start having featuring every day, as long as there's no high school sports, a player vignette. We've reached out to the schools we cover, and every day we're just going to share a story and share kind of a Q&A with some of these athletes who would have graced our pages during this time. And we want them to know that they are relevant, even if they're not actually playing their games. And it's something that we're excited about, because it's also going to allow us to include four new schools that we were going to have join our coverage area this spring. Three new schools, Griswold High, Lyman Memorial in Lebanon, and Bacon Academy in Colchester. That will allow us to say we cover all 17 high schools in New London County. It's something we wanted to do, and that's going to happen hopefully beginning the spring, but certainly going forward. So we will also feature athletes from those three schools in addition to the schools already in our coverage area. So I know our readers will enjoy it, and I hope they appreciate the fact that we know how important it is to keep these high school athletes in particular relevant on our sports pages, even if the games aren't being played. And Vicki Fulkerson, our Scholastic sports editor, took full reign over this, and I give her a lot of credit. You know, we're all going to chip in, but she's the brains behind it, and it's going to be a great feature. There are a couple of schools, local colleges, prep schools, we still haven't really been able to reach out to and talk to. UConn Every Point has one of the best baseball programs in New England. They've gone to the Junior College World Series a number of times. They particularly hit hard by not having a spring season because it's only a two-year school. Most of those kids use that as a springboard to go to four-year colleges, and not particularly their second year kids who were seniors at a junior college, we needed this year to be able to show, college coaches that they're able to, able to move on maybe to their schools.
Right.
So we're going to reach out to them, some of them through their coaches and their athletic director, to tell their stories, to see what's going on, because they're definitely in a state of flux right now. And then St. Thomas More, a little prep school up on Gardner Lake, they have a lot of foreign students, some who haven't to get back home, who are still on campus. So, we're going to reach out to Matt Quinn, the headmaster, and, just kind of see what kind of situation they're in. They have an elite prep school basketball program, obviously, that most of our readers are well aware of. Matt's dad, Jerry's been there. He just finished his 42nd year. This is the time he usually uses to get the rest of his, he's got four or five kids who have committed to schools already, but the rest of his roster is, this is the evaluation time. So he's got to make sure that they get set going forward. So that's something we're going to tell. And then the other thing, we're going to reach out to hopefully all of our professional baseball players, whether they be in the minor leagues or the major leagues. They obviously are in limbo, like all of baseball right now. And, we want to see what they're doing to stay in shape. I'm sure some have stayed at their spring training complexes, but a lot have now closed down. Matt Harvey, who is a free agent and, trying to regain his health after multiple arm surgery. I just saw a video of him back home in Groton, staying with his parents, and actually throwing to Cam Maguga, who's Fitch High's catcher, at Fitch the other day, just to get some workout in. So, we're going to reach out to all of those players and, give our readers an update on how they're doing. And then anybody else that comes along, there's just so many, we have our list, but it's ever-changing because, names are going to pop up on the radar, things are going to happen, and we'll certainly, get to those stories as well.
How can they reach you? How can coaches or parents or athletes reach you?
Yeah, very, very easily. Our email is really the best address. Our general email address is sports@theday.com. And if they have a story idea or just want to reach out and let us know about a good story, we certainly want to listen and we'll get back to them.
Well, thank you very much, Chuck, and I hope that you and your family stay safe. And I really appreciate, and I'm sure a lot of our readers and listeners appreciate the all the hard work that you're doing, that our whole organization is doing, but in particular, the sports department.
No, thank you. And it's definitely been a team effort, not only with us, but we know what the entire newsroom and the entire paper is going through. And, you know, just to encourage people to support local journalism in particular, I've gotten a few comments, as I'm sure you have, from coaches and ADs who, you know, have noticed that, you know, we're still keeping kids relevant on our sports pages and in the region and in the main front of the paper. And although the coronavirus coverage is up there for free for all to read, you know, we're still working hard, and we appreciate that people consider to subscribe either to print or online, because you know, we're showing them that the local newspaper is relevant.
And what days usually do your shipments come in?
So our biggest shipments come in Friday, Wednesday, and Saturday. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. They are key dropped, so wholesalers bring our products early in the morning before the store opens. We sent a press release the other day recently. We've started opening at 10 a.m. to give staff more of an opportunity to get the store stocked out when there's less people in the store.
Yep. And are you still seeing sort of the same types of shipments coming in? Is there any low in any stock or supply or anything like that?
We have seen issues in the supply chain. Varies between our largest suppliers. There have been, so far there's been one day where we missed a whole shipment from our biggest wholesaler. There has been one day where we are not able to receive refrigerated items. However, in those situations, we've gone to other local vendors to be able to make up. For example, meat has been sparse at times, so we've decided to carry more seafood from Seawell to try to make up that difference.
Got it. Okay. And the one shipment that you missed, what were some of the things in that shipment?
It's store-wide. We have UNFI is the largest wholesaler that we have. We are a member of the National Cooperative Grocers, who have a contract with UNFI. There's been several stores, cooperatives across New England, who have been having supply chain issues with them. We're all doing the best we can, they've had some issues, but so far this week has been pretty good.
And have you seen issues at other stores, like with paper products, like paper towels and toilet paper flying off the shelf?
Or? Sure, yeah. So far, toilet paper has been flying off the shelf. Some of the larger packs of it have been out of stock, but the single rolls, you know, there's been almost no time where we haven't had any on the shelf. We might just be able to sell it to you one roll at a time instead of a 12-pack or a 24-pack.
And are you limiting how much people can buy at this point or no?
Yes, in fact, and your paper ran a story about that yesterday. So far, the only thing that we're limiting is packs of toilet paper to one per customer and individual rolls to two per customer. When we get fresh meat in, like you can see right here, like right now we have steaks that were very limited, so we're limiting them to one per customer. But toilet paper and fresh meat are the only things that we're enforcing limits per customer on at the moment.
And it seems like you guys have still been able to get a steady supply of produce. Would you say that's true?
Yes. There were times where we were short. For example, we had almost no potatoes on St. Patrick's Day. But for the most part, the produce supply, we use different wholesalers for that. And we've also been able to call upon some of our local farms who still have things like storage carrots in abundant qualities. So fresh produce is probably the one area of the store that's been hit the least hard in the supply chain. We still have delicious, fresh-looking produce here on demand with very little shortages.
And I think you were telling me the other day that it was like you saw like three times your normal sales during sort of the last week or two.
Correct. Yeah. So that really ramped up two Fridays ago was the time that we saw for that weekend pretty much consistently three times our normal sales. And for a period of time, it was about double our normal sales. Right now, we're transitioning into having more curbside pickup. We're still seeing a slight increase above our typical daily sales, despite our reduced hours, and we expect that to increase more now that we're offering curbside pickup.
Got it, and that's new as of this week. You're offering
curbside pickup. So it's not new. We'd always had the infrastructure in place. We also bring orders to the Fisher's Island Ferry year round, so we've had infrastructure to do that, and we've had pickup infrastructure in place for years, but there's not really much demand for it. People like to come into the co-op to shop, to see our friendly faces, to, you know, take a look at the local products. And in the past week, we've shifted from maybe having a handful of pickup orders a month to this. For today, we have 19 pickup orders going out the door.
So now you're seeing an increase in that, obviously.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, so today we really ramped up. We had, in the height of it, we did have to put a moratorium on it. Well, we got more staff in that department. We relaunched it, and today we have 19 pickups, and more are coming in daily.
And can you talk about how that process works? I mean, basically, people pick out things online, and then you...
Yep. So, yeah, people go to our website. It's an online ordering platform, very similar to, you know, larger big box conventional grocers. You place your order online, you leave your contact information. The staff member in the store goes through before hours are open or after we're closed, picks your products, gets it all boxed up for you. And then at that point, the customer, right now we're asking the customer to pay in advance. So we take their credit card number over the phone just to minimize interaction so that, we can bring the products right out to the customer's car and, you know, be able to give them the safest environment possible.
Anything else you think is worth adding or that you've noticed anecdotally?
Get it in there that as of right now, our hours have been reduced to 10 a.m. until 7 p.m. That we're doing our best as grocers. We never expected to be first responders in a national pandemic or crisis. But we're very proud of our role that we're playing in this moment, and especially being the only grocery store within walking distance of downtown New London, we want to make sure that our community is still served, and we're doing everything we can to do that.
And on that note, I mean, I think it's just important to make clear that you don't have to be a member to shop here.
Correct. We are open to the public. Fiddleheads is a cooperatively owned business, but all are open to shop online, to come in the store 7 days a week.
And it sounds like you guys might have increased staff or hired some new people. Is that true? Or maybe pulled people off part-time, full-time?
Correct, yeah. So everything in this situation, everything changes daily. You know, we've had, haven't done any hiring at the moment, but we, so far, we've just been moving our existing staff around, providing them opportunities to work before the store opens and after the store closes, to be able to manage the new wine loader system, as well as be able to receive shipments and get the products on the shelf at a time where customers aren't in the store, to make us both safer, so that our staff don't have to, better put 6 feet between them and the next human being, and the customer doesn't have to worry about an additional human being in that aisle while they're picking up their cereal, their toilet paper, their meat, their nuts, etc.
Yeah. And then you guys obviously have, you're requiring people to wear gloves. Now you have gloves on hand for people who are handling the bulk items.
Correct. Yeah. So we're, at this moment, we are currently making our own hand sanitizer per recommendations from the governor lifted that. I was able to get a couple cases of isopropyl alcohol before they became unavailable. So we're offering hand sanitizer and recommending that customers wear gloves. We have them set up in the front of the store. We are requiring that customers wear gloves while they shop in our bulk department, because, you know, it's a frequent area where hand contact is. But even despite that, we're still sanitizing all of the hand contact surfaces in our bulk department and at our registers almost on the hour.
Thanks, James.
Yeah, thank you.
Are your hours the same as they always have been?
Yeah. We haven't changed any hours.
Yeah. What have you noticed people are buying the most?
Toilet paper.
Of course.
Meat, eggs, all the basic stuff that you need, bread and all that, we're always wiped out.
Gotcha.
And all that stuff.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Are people asking you, when you get deliveries?
Yes, we're like, we get it Tuesday morning, Friday morning, and then... In the morning time, it's very busy when we get the deliveries. Like, today morning was crazy.
So people know that you're getting the deliveries that night.
Yeah, so they come in and then, like, you have this? And we're like, yes. And then we give it to them. And then, by the time even, by 12, we're out of half the things that they need.
Yeah.
And we just got it in.
Is this deliveries for everything in the store? Or is it, just toilet paper other things?
No, it's for everything. It's all grocery items, all beer and everything.
Yeah. It just must have, changed things for you guys so much. But at the same time, I guess it could be sort of a good thing for business, right?
Yeah, business-wise is great. When people are panicking, that's the only... It's a great part.
Yeah.
We heard from James Burke, front-end manager at Fiddleheads in New London, and Krishna Patel, employee at Country Marketplace in Oakdale. And thanks to reporters Julia Bergman and Sten Spinella for capturing audio. Find all of our coronavirus and COVID-19 coverage at theday.com/coronavirus. And subscribe to our email newsletter at theday.com/coronavirus updates. Thank you for listening.